Maven Hubbard, spring has sprung, the birds are chirping, and the pop girls are pop girling.
Oh, and you know what that means, Nora Princiati.
Every single album is back. This spring is packed with new releases from some of the biggest pop stars in the world, including our girl Taylor Swift, and we'll be covering it all.
We'll, of course, break down every angle on the Tortured Poets Department, and we'll also cover new music from Beyonce, Dua Lipa, Maggie Rogers, Kacey Musgraves, and Ariana Grande.
It's Pop Girl Spring on every single album.
New episodes starting March 28th.
On Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's The Bear, starring Jeremy Allen White, Ayo Edebiri, and Eben Moss Backrack. Season 2 follows as the crew work to transform their grimy sandwich joint into a next-level spot. It turns out the only thing harder than running a restaurant is opening a new one. Television Academy members can watch all episodes at fxnetworks.com/FYC.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
It is Monday, April 22nd. By nearly every objective measure, it was a very good quarter for Netflix. The company announced earnings last week, and it generated $2.3 billion in earnings. It's on track for $10 billion this year. Remember, it was not that long ago that Netflix made zero profit. Many questioned whether it ever would. Subscriber numbers hit 270 million worldwide, up a surprising 9.3 million, thanks in part to the password-sharing crackdown. And its co-CEOs, Ted Sarandos and Greg Peters, were rewarded with massive pay for the past year, $50 million for Ted. And yet, the stock actually dropped about 8% on Friday after the reveal. It's still down today. Part of that is that the numbers were expected. The stock has already risen a bunch this year, pretty steadily. It's hard to believe that 2 years after the great Netflix correction and the nosedive from the mid-$600 range to below $200 a share, Netflix was back above $600, though now it's down to the mid-500s. One reason investors are nervous about Netflix is that it said it would stop providing both quarterly subscriber data and average revenue per user, that's ARPU, though it will still announce milestones. The same Netflix, whose CEO came on this very show to talk about how transparent it is now hiding arguably its two most important metrics. The company instead wants us all to focus on the traditional financial metrics that many companies reveal, like revenue, profit, earnings. No matter that throughout its existence, Netflix has kind of been defined by that subscriber number. It's what got the company to be treated like a growth tech stock rather than a legacy media stock in the first place. And that growth is what got the rest of Hollywood to chase Netflix and streaming. We know how that turned out. So why is Netflix doing this? And what might the implications be for all these other streamers that have defined themselves in opposition to Netflix? Today, we've got Lucas Shaw back in here to discuss. It's the Netflix backtrack on transparency and why they're saying bye-bye to subscriber numbers. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. Okay, we are here with Lucas Shaw from Bloomberg, our Monday guy. Welcome back, Lucas.
Did you pour out a bottle of Old English over the weekend?
For who?
For the end of the Netflix subscriber count era.
Oh, no. I thought you were meaning for the end of all rationality when it comes to executive salaries because David Zaslav got paid $50 million for the stock tanking in 2023.
His is the most egregious to you. We had the Netflix guys got a collective $90 million, I think.
But the Netflix guys are doing great.
Yeah,
that's how it's supposed to work.
Iger took a serious pay cut. He went down to 32.
I know. I'm sending him a little fruit basket and some wine. I feel bad for him.
Live Nation CEO Mike Rapino, Michael Rapino did $21 million, I think, after a great year. So he didn't really follow the playbook.
Yeah, but I think he's like hiding in his bunker so that the government doesn't come and seize his assets after essentially running a quasi-monopoly for 10 years now.
He's been consistently one of the highest paid executives, so I'm not too worried for him.
No, I know. And it's all the John Malone companies. Greg Maffei he's way overpaid. I mean, all those you know, Liberty people make way too much money. It's insane. But we are not talking about salaries today. We are talking about the Netflix business because they made some changes in the earnings call. The numbers were great. You know, all the metrics that you would want are sort of firing on all cylinders. However, the stock tanked 8% afterward. And I think it's because people see this reverse course on revealing subscriber numbers and average revenue per user as a quasi-telegraph of what is coming. And what is coming may not be great.
I'm going to be a little selfish for a second. That market reaction really sucked for all the people writing about Netflix in the moment because it was so obvious, I think, that Netflix was going to have a big quarter. They'd been getting this boost from the password sharing. They had just like one popular show after another. All the analysts were doing upgrades. All the third-party indicators were like huge first quarter for Netflix.
And they had all the Warner's movies. People underestimate that. Like they had a ton of new-to-Netflix content.
And they delivered on that, right? They end up adding more than 9 million subscribers. Their second-best first quarter ever after that the pandemic one, which should barely even count. And the sales are good, the profit's good, the forecast is good. I think the two things that cause any concern are them saying that the growth in the second quarter would be less than the first, which happens every year, so that really shouldn't be an issue. And then to your point, the changing in reporting, which was clearly an issue to all of us when we saw it in the letter that they send to shareholders, and I think spooked the heck out of Wall Street because the only thing they can read from that is a negative, even if Netflix's argument is just this shouldn't be the metric that matters anymore.
Right. So let's go through what Netflix is saying versus what's really going on. Because what they are saying is twofold, that this is a mature company now. They don't measure themselves on subscriber gains and losses. They are looking more at the overall financial picture. They have different pricing tiers. They have different pricing in different markets. Greg Peters said, "We've also evolved our pricing and plans with multiple tiers, different price points across different countries. I think those price points are going to become increasingly different." And that's their justification for moving people away. That's sort of BS because they're also getting rid of the ARPU of the revenue per user number.
Well, no, they're related.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That we could see what the revenue per user is if they would release it, and that would sort of account for the different pricing in different markets. But they're not giving us that either, so it's a little BS. But they're also saying that with the ad tier, that it's not even necessarily about the number that they're putting out there for subscribers. It's about how they are serving those existing subscribers and extracting more money from those existing subscribers via pushing people to the ad tier.
The growth is really good right now. They're getting this surge because of new users doing the sharing, new users signing up for their own, and it's probably the best it's going to be ever again, at least in the near future, right? There's not going to be some... artificial is the wrong word because what they're doing is totally legitimate, but there's not going to be this just sort of a little unnatural lift in subscribers
from the password sharing crackdown.
Correct. Yeah. And so you shift to looking at revenue because that's going to be a better story for them, right? They can raise revenue in three ways. They can do price increases, which they're doing right now. They can raise revenue by signing up new subscribers, which they're also doing. And they can raise revenue, to your point, with a more effective ad tier. You know, they've said, I think, that the monetization on ads is not as high as premium, meaning that they don't make as much money from someone on the ad tier right now as they do on someone on the premium, the non-ad tier. Mm-hmm. They expect that to change. Most of these services, when they build up the ad business enough, can make as much, if not more, from the ad tier. And Netflix just isn't there. And so they see an opportunity to shift the focus to the numbers that, if they execute, will definitely look better going down the line. And I think there's what they're saying has some basis in reality. Like, yes, there are more different plan tiers, and subscribers doesn't mean as much as it used to. But for a company that talks a lot about transparency and wanted credit for releasing more ratings than anyone, and talks certainly a lot about
Ted came on this very show.
Yeah.
to talk about how great they're being on Transparency. And Bella says they are the most transparent of all the streamers.
And if you, but so if you can continue to have your revenue growing at what they say is double digit, they, you know, they want their revenue to grow like 10 to 20% every quarter, every year. You can do that and still offer the transparency of here are our subscriber numbers, here are our ARPU. And oh, by the way, if you're all about transparency and one of the issues is that you have people paying for different types of plans, tell us what they do, right? You can say we have 60 million who pay for this and 120 million who pay for this and 40 million who pay for that. Now, I know that they don't want to do that because that will give even more insight into to kind of pick them apart on Wall Street and competitors. But, you know, obviously we'd like that.
Yeah. Okay. So I think there are a couple other things going on here. And I think one of them is comps. They know we're heading into this era where, like you said, they're going to be focusing on the revenue and the profits. And they have a decent, better than decent, they have a great story to tell on those fronts. And importantly, the other competitors do not. And while growth may be happening on platforms like Paramount Plus or Amazon Prime, I mean, they're, you know, we're seeing that they have pretty significant scale. Peacock is growing. They don't have profits, and Netflix does. I mean, they're looking at earnings of $10 billion this year. And I think that they see the trade-off here as beneficial to them if they can start getting the street and the Hollywood community to compare Netflix to the others in profitability. And that is what's going on here, first and foremost. Secondly, I think we're overlooking the compensation angle. I mean, this might be a cynical take, but executives do what they are personally incentivized to do. And Greg Peters and Ted Sarandos, they have been incentivized by the stock market. They continue to be incentivized by the stock market. But the market is valuing profitability over the scale play. And they're going to switch their focus to going after profits and revenue over scale if it benefits their bottom line, which it does. They, even if they have to sacrifice scale and the gaining of subscribers to boost the bottom line, they're going to do it. And they don't want to be punished by people saying, oh, they had a blowout quarter on earnings, but look at the subscriber number, it dropped. They just don't want that because overall their compensation is based on the former.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much I'm buying into the compensation angle. I mean, I'm sure some of that affects how people think, but that's really never been the way that that Netflix has been motivated. Those guys have done just fine with their
well.
Their
stock. Wait a second. They've all benefited from the stock run up. Their share. I mean, their comp is based on increasing the stock.
Yes, but I don't think they're changing the metrics like this just because of comp.
I think it's all related. Like the market changed first, and now they are changing.
What I would say is interesting and potentially risky for them about this is that, you know, Netflix has always traded at a multiple way higher than any of the other kind of Hollywood media companies, much to their frustration, right? Like the company's valuation relative to its earnings and relative to its sales, its revenue is much, much higher compared to, forget it, I mean, you can take Paramount at the bottom end, but even a Disney or many of these other companies. And if they are asking analysts and investors to focus on those traditional, and I should take a step back, that is because it's been seen as a growth tech company, right? Where there is just more and more room for it to get bigger and bigger and bigger and swallow the world. And so you get traded at what is a seemingly unnaturally high valuation because you're going to grow into it. And so if you're shifting the focus to the traditional metrics of sales and profit, you are also kind of asking Wall Street to value you like a traditional company, which in the case of Netflix would cause the stock to go down if you were to use a traditional multiple.
But that's an argument for why they shouldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm saying that it's a little tricky. The argument for why they should is because the growth metric is just not going to look that good going forward, and these metrics are going to look better. But there's eventually going to have to be a settling, because if you want them to value traditionally, then the valuation would actually go down.
Yeah, and like I said, the market has sort of already done that. It's already looking at profitability, and that's kind of what is screwing the legacy companies, is they don't have profits. They've chased Netflix's numbers for 5 to 7 years. So they're all focused on reducing their debt and increasing their bottom line. And that's their path to increasing their stock price. So Netflix is doing the same, essentially, just doing it from an incredible position of strength.
I was wondering, because I thought the reaction would go the other way. I was wondering if Netflix was gonna top a $300 billion market cap again. Mm. After this one. And instead they have to settle. I think they're now at probably about 240.
Yeah, sad. Let's go to the sports angle here, though, because I was reading a couple of the analyst reports, and you know, Ted has softened a bit on his never sports mantra that he stuck to for many years. And if you look at the shareholder letter, Netflix is described as a, quote, promotional tool that enhances what they called, quote, fandom. And Ted Sarandos referred to WWE as year-round live sports, not sports adjacent, not the drama of sports or whatever he called it. But I think that switching to this metric suggests that they are more likely to go after sports, specifically NBA, now that that window this week has opened to negotiate NBA rights. But I think that this all suggests that they are looking to get more money out of their existing subscribers. If it means not gaining subscribers, that's fine. If they can better serve them, they're leaning into live events. They're leaning into stuff that can get more advertising in front of more eyeballs, and sports fits that bill.
100%. I think there's no question that Netflix is going to be investing more in sports. Their language has been shifting on it for a while. And you just think about strategically about what they need. If you are trying to build out an ad tier, you're trying to create more impressions for advertisers to buy, which basically means you need more people spending more time watching your service. The most effective way to do that in film and television is sports.
Even if the subscriber numbers go down, because they're not going to have the scrutiny that they might have had they said, oh, they spent $1.5 billion on the in-season tournament for NBA. Look what it did to subscriber numbers. They weren't able to, you know, pump out the series that get everybody to subscribe. Their numbers are going down. But now they can say, look at our overall financial picture. We are able to serve that NBA audience a shit ton of ads, and our financials are going to go up.
I think I'm still a little skeptical on them taking a big NBA package. But I don't know. But I'm not ruling it out, because...
Well, do you count the in-season tournament to be a big package?
It's a new package. I actually think...
It's like 2 weeks of programming, or 2.5 weeks.
I actually think the in-season tournament makes a lot of sense for them. I've had enough conversations around it that lead me to believe that there are concerns about how much it's going to cost. I think in general, the folks at Netflix are still a little squeamish about how much they have to pay for rental. The reason why the in-season tournament to me makes sense is because it's so new that Netflix can essentially take it over and rebrand it. You know, they could call it the Netflix Cup, whatever they want to call it. They could do a long-term deal for it.
And plug the crap out of it worldwide. So I think the NBA...
Well, that's why it's good for the NBA. The NBA has clearly been messaging, we want Netflix in, because they're getting a lot of reporters to write things about certain deals that are happening, which they're from folks who I'll just say, whose sourcing is clearly on the NBA side of the ledger.
Yeah, and I think that Netflix is such a powerful partner that the NBA might take a lesser dollar amount in order to get in business with Netflix. And that's where the money issue comes in, because if Netflix is squeamish about paying $2 billion for 2.5-3 weeks of NBA content, maybe that price comes down just for Netflix.
Yeah. I don't know that the NBA gives anyone a price cut for anything.
I don't know. I mean, they can extract it elsewhere. I mean, if NBC, all the reports I'm seeing and the rumors I'm hearing is that NBC really wants in as well. And maybe they go in with Amazon and it becomes, you know, Amazon gets a bulk of one of the packages and then NBC airs some of those games on linear to give the NBA the NBC reach. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios in play here.
Yeah.
And all of them lead to the NBA getting more money.
Yes. I will be curious how aggressive Netflix gets with creating more of its own events. The executives there all seem very excited about this Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight over the summer.
I know. And now we've got a live roast of Tom Brady.
Well, they're doing live programming. I mean, it's not sports, but live programming with John Mulaney almost every night for their comedy festival in early next month. They're definitely pushing more and more into live ahead of the WWE debut next year.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if that corresponds with a spike in advertising, because you've reported this and I've heard the same, that, you know, advertisers, they're interested in Netflix, but maybe not to the extent that everybody thought they would be, considering the size of the platform.
Or they're interested, but they literally don't have enough to buy.
Right, exactly. The inventory is not there. And, you know, the number of viewers is still very small on Netflix, even though 40% of new subscribers are coming into the platform via the ad tier.
In the markets where they have advertising.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, we're talking, you know, Netflix, they added 9.3 million last quarter. If 40% of the markets, you know, we're talking maybe they added 2 to 4 million to their ad tier last quarter. That's fine, but it's still small.
Right. Especially when you've got Amazon opting everybody in unless you opt out.
Where are you on that?
I don't care. I don't watch enough Amazon for it to matter to me. I have not paid the $3, but
I have not either.
Yeah.
Watching ads during Mr. and Mrs. Smith is kind of annoying though.
Yeah. But I watched The Boss Show a couple months ago and it was on Freevee anyways, so there were ads. It's annoying, but not enough for me. If they had three to five shows I cared about, maybe I would up the number, but I don't know, I'm just not watching enough Amazon. And what I do watch is NFL in the fall, and that already has ads. All right, so where does this go? Where does this impact? Does this impact the other companies and how they report their earnings? Are we going to see
them? Yeah, it gives them cover to not report subscribers anymore.
Are they going
to
do that?
The issue for them is they don't have other good numbers to point to.
Exactly. What are they going to do? Point all the attention to their unprofitable service?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what they do, because their alternatives are to report losses for the most part, other than WBD at the moment. Or to report, I mean, I guess they could really try to focus it on revenue. But I don't know that helps them all that much. And certainly not if you're one of those services that's still growing. I mean, Palmcast doesn't really report traditional numbers for Peacock or for D2C. It's a little different. But for Paramount, like them being able to tout the growth in subscribers every quarter is one of the best things that they have going for them.
Exactly. They lean on that because they don't want you to see all the other stuff going on there.
But all these other companies either have hit a wall or will hit a wall, right? Like Disney kind of stopped growing nearly as quickly. Paramount, assuming, will level off because they're not globally distributed. There are only so many people in the U.S. they can get to sign up. Amazon doesn't report numbers like that. Apple doesn't report numbers like that, you know? What does this allow Disney and Paramount, as long as Paramount stays public? And Warner Brothers Discovery.
Right. Well, the Max stuff, yeah. Because I do think that they don't want to point attention at their losses. But if they can turn that narrative around, which they're all trying to do, maybe it comes at the expense of growth, which we're already seeing places like Disney and Max, as you mentioned, where they are sacrificing growth for profitability in order to please Wall Street. And that could end up in the same situation where they, in a year, do have profitable streaming services and they want to point everybody to that and not the flat or even declining growth.
Yeah. Do you think there's any world in which one of these other media company streaming services may kind of catches up to some extent with Netflix?
In profits?
No, just in general. Like, are we talking about usage, right? Because that's what they're trying. They also want to talk about engagement, right? Netflix.
Well, do you include YouTube?
Well, YouTube's already bigger than it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, those are the two horses, right? Those are the two biggest. One is primarily free. The other is primarily subscription. And then it's everybody else. Who gets to that scale? Do you think Disney does? I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the combination or the bundling of Disney and Hulu is after the integration and whether that juices both of them. I don't see a scenario in the next 5 years where any of these services, Disney, whatever, they could merge together and they still won't get close to Netflix.
Right.
I mean, Amazon is the only one that has the potential. And like, we don't, because it's a false number and we don't know how many people are engaging with Amazon Prime Video that are Prime subscribers, like, it's sort
it's
of a
small
fake
because the fact is that Amazon makes up for less than half of the viewing of Netflix, and that includes usage
according
of
to
all,
Nielsen.
And that includes usage of all sorts of other services.
Yeah, but that does not include phones.
You think more people are watching Amazon on phones than Netflix?
No,
I don't know.
I would argue more people are watching Netflix on their phone than are watching Amazon, but it doesn't include phones, and people always remind me that. So, you know, I actually think the one that benefits the most is YouTube, obviously.
Well, from phones, yeah.
Barring some kind of disruption that is unforeseen, or some, you know, Apple buying three or four of these things and really putting billions of dollars into competing, which I don't see happening, or the government allowing, I think it's pretty much set for the next foreseeable future. All right, on that note, thank you, Lucas.
Thanks, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Craig, are you watching a show called Tracker on CBS?
I am not, but the only reason I know it exists is because it is constantly advertised during CBS football games. I believe it was the show that aired after the Super Bowl.
It was. That was going to be my next question, was going to be if you've heard of a show called Tracker. Clearly you have, because you watch sports on CBS, but it's a hit. It is a big hit for CBS in this diminished times for broadcast television, and CBS put out a press release last year noting the top 20 shows for the year so far. Remember, this is a strike-shortened season, so it's basically shows that have premiered in the winter rather than the fall season. The top 10 so far were Tracker, NCIS, Young Sheldon, FBI, Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, The Equalizer, 60 Minutes, Ghosts, and Blue Bloods. That is your top 10 shows on broadcast.
I gotta say, shouts out Queen Latifah and The Equalizer for still holding strong. I had no idea that show was so popular.
Oh, still holding strong. What about Blue Bloods? Blue Bloods is in its like 12th season or something.
I mean, the same with NCIS, has been on forever.
I know. I mean, it's just amazing. I would love to see the age demos of these shows, because this is not the 18 to 49 demo. This is all audiences. This is live plus 7 ratings, although with a couple live plus 3 and same day mixed in because it was more recent. But yeah, that is where we stood last week. And my prediction is that I think that for the first time in possibly decades, we are going to have a new show as the most watched primetime show of the year. Tracker will likely become the most watched, and this is non-sports, non-specials, the most watched entertainment program of the year. And that has not happened, according to one research source, that hasn't happened since the summer reality shows of the early 2000s with Idol and Survivor. And if you go back outside of the summer, perhaps it hasn't happened since the early 90s with America's Funniest Home Videos.
Are these shows designed in a lab? Like, how do they come up with these concepts? This guy's name, Justin Hartley's character's name is Coulter Shaw, and he travels around in his RV solving crimes and helping the police. I just like, how do people come up with these ideas? Like, they must just
They're called development executives.
No, these are ideas generators online.
No, stop. There's a very sophisticated executive class who comes up with these shows. And we all joke about them when they get announced, like, oh, great, they're doing another Chicago show, more FBI. I mean, Dick Wolf, like, yeah, it needs more money. But these shows work.
Yeah, I mean, if you keep going after 10, it's Chicago PD at 11, NCIS Hawaii, FBI Most Wanted, FBI International, Fire Country, 911, Law and Order.
911 is the first non-CBS NBC one. So ABC has its highest rated show at number 17 for the year. It's amazing. It's, you know, when you get old, you got to have something to watch. And that's what people watch. So, all right, that's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Lucas Shaw. I want to thank producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez. And I want to thank you. We will see you later this week.